Friday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week, all in one place.
A sales slap in the face. A sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true Sell or Diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet,
what are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die. So it's the 8.5 qualities you must have to be an effective sales leader. Nada, what's number one?
Number one is maintain a positive attitude, solution-oriented, action-oriented, people-oriented. A leader's enthusiasm is contagious. If you get too close, you might catch a serious case of success.
Yeah, when I made number one, I had a choice between maintain a positive attitude and don't be a dick. Because so many sales leaders don't have that personality that exudes encouragement rather than what are you doing today? Show me your records. So what you show me your backlog. Show me your pipeline. All the crap that sales leaders do that don't actually help make a sale.
I like that you listed not just a positive attitude, but also solution-oriented, yeah. Action-oriented, people-oriented. Yeah. Because what happens so often is that people have issues and they go to their sales leader expecting solutions. And so if you want to be a leader in sales, whether you're like a leader leading teams or not, but you just want to be a leader making more sales, you got to be the answer to issues. You got to be the problem solver, the action taker. So I love that, Jeffrey.
Second.
What's number two?
Number two, embrace change. Change is certain. Followers tend to resist change. It is the mark of a leader to welcome change and take advantage of the opportunity it presents.
I have taken the word change and substituted the word opportunity for it because that's what change really represents in your life. If something's different going to occur, you have to look for the pony in a barn full of horseshit.
That's right. I say that all the time. And if you're the person working for a leader who's not embracing change, just realize that one of the things that may be holding them back from embracing that change is fear. It's fear and risk of the unknown. It's fear and risk of their reputation. It's fear and risk of what it could do to sales. And so if you want to make that change for your team or for your customer or whatever it is, you got to decrease that risk. You got to do whatever it takes to help your leader see how you can decrease that risk. Now, before we get to number three, Rachel is asking if we're going to Chicago or Milwaukee. Now, we were in Chicago last year.
No, but Milwaukee is a definite possibility.
Yeah. So, but come see us in Ohio. Aren't they sort of close?
Yeah.
Or no, come to St. Louis. That's close to Chicago.
Yeah. And there you go.
See, I know geography, I swear. And we have two more friends here, Glenville and
hey, Glenn.
Michael Silverman.
Ooh, Glenn, I was just bragging about you the other day to somebody who was, I can't remember where the hell they were, but there's some real estate magnet guy, and I said, you need to know Glenn Bill. He's Mr. Frickin' Real Estate.
That's right, he is. And Michael, thank you for helping us with Jeffrey's lost ring.
Yes, Michael.
Yeah. All right, Nada, what's number three?
Number three, we're going to deploy some courage. Douglas MacArthur said, courage is just fear that holds out a little bit longer. It's good advice. George Patton even said, I don't take my counsel from my fears. Good advice as well. Leaders choose courage.
And again, I had to change the title of this. I couldn't say, don't be a chicken shit.
Who made you change these titles? Your publisher?
Yeah, I'm wondering.
No. I'm trying to be politically correct.
PC?
Yeah,
got
I don't
it.
Want to, I don't want
got
to.
We know better.
I only want to piss off a few people.
I got you. So it's interesting because I actually brought up fear in the second one, but I totally agree. It relates here too. I think that one's awesome. So what's number four, Nada?
Number four would be take a risk. The biggest risk is to never take one. One of the hallmarks of success is the willingness to risk. Leaders are determined to win or try again.
I want you to think about the great Newt Rockne, who tried the shift in the backfield with the four horsemen and won a big game, and it was the first time they ever did it. This guy was a risk taker. Lombardi, risk taker. Think of any coach that you know, risk taker. Even the jackass Sean Payton took a risk by having an onside kick to open up the second half of a Super Bowl and won as a result of it. And he is a jackass, by the way.
So my response for number two, like, still holds because I talked about risk and fear. Yeah. And I had no idea those were coming down your list. So love how we're on the same page about all this. It's so crazy. It's like we know each other or something.
It's almost like you two are a married couple.
Yeah, right? You know? It's almost like that.
Almost.
All right. I love this. What's number five? So if you're just joining us, by the way, these are the 8.5 qualities that are essential if you're going to be a great sales leader. And they come from Jeffrey Gitomer.
And you can also take them as a great salesperson. I tried to make the list to where you could exchange salesperson or sales leader, but keep going.
All right, Nada.
All right, before we get to number five, I would also recommend if you have a friend that is struggling with their sales, why aren't you sharing this part of the message? You can get them better. They can help. They can stop asking you to borrow money. Like, there's things like this that they probably need here. But we're going to get to
so the next time they come to borrow money, hey, sure, I'll give you that $50 as long as you listen to the Sell or Die podcast.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. We also take donations. So
yeah. Unsolicited donations, not like the ones we're begging for right now.
Exactly. Oh, man.
Number five is listen. Oh. Listen with the intent to understand. Leaders listen to learn. Your prospects know their needs, and they know what's happening on the front lines of their business. Just listen.
Have you ever been in a sales meeting where the you're being sold to, and the salesperson doesn't listen?
They won't shut the hell up.
It's like the most irritating thing on the planet. And I just want to like shake them and be like, dude, you're not listening. I'm making the decision here about whether or not I'm buying. Why don't you listen to what I want? Don't be that dude, please.
Yeah, exactly. There are a couple of things that come to mind immediately, but listening with the intent to understand is the second half of listening, because most salespeople listen with the intent to respond, which is the wrong way to listen, because then you tend to interrupt. And my challenge to any salesperson is just take notes while the customer's talking so that you show them that you value what it is that they're saying. And we'll just kind of go from there.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. All right. Oh, Alex likes my new computer cover. If you want one, I'll tell you where I got mine.
We'll
I
put
like
it in
too.
The show notes,
thanks,
yeah.
Alex. All right, Nada, what's the next one?
Number six, communicate. Leaders set the example for open communication. They use their heads, they say what they feel, they speak from their heart.
Right. If you speak from your heart, it's going to be an emotional exchange as opposed to speaking from your head, where it's going to be a logical exchange. And if you start your sales meeting out by saying, we got a lot of stuff to get through today, so everybody listen up, I'm already gone. But if you say, this is going to be the best sales meeting of the year, and I want to make sure that everybody gets takes full advantage of this, because there's money at the end of it.
Yeah.
Same meeting, different jackass.
And different response as well. And so it's not just communicating internally, it's also communicating with your customer.
Yeah. So there you darn go.
All right. What's number seven?
Number seven is delegate and empower. Leaders share responsibility. They don't dictate. They set examples for others to follow. Leaders encourage growth in others by challenging them to take new responsibility, encouraging them to succeed, and supporting them if they fail. Leaders understand that mistakes are lessons on the way to success.
Wow.
So we have some people on our team, I won't mention any names, obviously, who sometimes want everything to be perfect.
What's it rhyme with? What does it rhyme with?
Again, what are we talking about here? Let's move on to number 8.
Oh, no, no, we're on 7 right now, I think. And I don't know if you have people that you work with who also feel the same way, where they want things to be perfect, and so they're scared to try them. Until they have all the answers and know all the things and are certain, wow, that was very S-y, sorry, and are certain that they're going to come out perfectly. But here's the thing. Every time you take action, that action creates clarity. And every time you take a risk, you get a little bit further to creating the potential sale, to moving the deal further along. You got to keep trying. And so...
Here's what Jen's saying. Fuck up early.
But I'd rather you do it and try it and fuck up and learn from your mistake than not do it at all.
Agreed.
Because if you don't do it at all, you're never going to learn from your mistake.
Agreed. And don't be hesitant to make a mistake.
Yeah, if your boss is not empowering you to do that, go out and empower yourself. You don't need a permission slip. If you need one, here, you just got one from me, okay? Yeah. That's your permission slip to go fuck up.
We'll send you an email. Diehards, the great Ryan Kennedy. Plug it into a wall. Or a power box, mm-hmm. and you test it to see if it's going to work. What happened?
Well, I guess related to that, I'll be the first to tell you, we've never had a eureka moment. That's been one of those, it's been a misconception. And most companies will tell you that. There's never a eureka. Like,
interview over.
We had a, but it is worth saying, like, okay, so you know the diverging a little bit, the Wright Brothers picture that we all have in our license plate, in North Carolina at least. Where there's the plane
on the beach.
And they're standing there.
Yeah.
There's some context behind that. That's taken as a eureka moment. Where in actuality, that was one of many photos that were taken. And that just happened to be when they were 18 inches off the ground. When they were around 20, the next one around 20. It was very similar with Adam Power. We built a prototype that was big, not feasible. It was in a Radio Shack hobby box, to be even more specific, and didn't look like a breaker. But we at least got functionality working. And we said that, okay, we've tested enough to know that says the technology is feasible. It's there. We can make it work in a lab. Then the next iteration, we 3D printed a box. Next iteration, we learned about what Underwriters Laboratories requires of the box, mm-hmm. and sort of the configurations and shapes and things. And it was an iterative process that just took a very long time.
Wow.
So it was one triumph after another.
Yeah. Well,
making it smaller, making it work, making it respond. Documenting the circumstances and so on into the night.
That's right.
And I'm assuming each win or victory created more belief in the product and the possibility of it.
It did. It did. And that's the easy part. I mean, the hard part was the multitude of failures we had along the way.
Yeah.
And we hear about that, like failures. Yeah.
You were convinced, and then you became a disciple of the process.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And the hard part was the failures, though, because that happened more than we won. Mm. You know, it really.
So, did you overcome those failures?
You know, there's a couple of things you could look at. One is that I think if you can check the box in the physics,
mm-hmm.
that says the physics are there, you know, there's a solution. Mm. That's what a lot of people. I've seen not do in the technology sector is they don't first check the fundamental box that says, okay, physically this is possible. It's just a matter of figuring out the configuration that's going to make that happen. Mm-hmm. I think that was a part of it, to know we did that up front.
Yeah.
You know, and to know that this is not impossible. It's just figuring out how to do it. And the other one is I would say that there, I hate to say work hard and stay in school, but it is kind of like that. It's just knowing, I guess it does relate to that. Just knowing that that's there, you know, and communicating that to the team that it's for a bigger cause and that mm-hmm. the physics are there. We just have to figure it out.
And you have to make payroll. Cool. No, you have to make payroll.
Yeah.
Well, let's
so you got to go find venture money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. So how did you make that sale to venture capitalists when the product itself didn't actually exist?
Well, we had built a couple of prototypes first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we spent our own money. and for some time after that, actually, and built a couple of prototypes and showed it to a couple of folks who were who understood the industry and who could see instantly that a digital breaker would be a game changer. And we got some initial money, you know, to go build that further. And then, you know, the one thing I think we did right in raising money was to stay out of stealth mode.
Please welcome the great Diane DiResta.
You know, I have to say that speaking is the new competitive advantage, and people can't avoid this anymore. And what's different, because we've known each other for a while. I've been in this business, well, I admit to 20 years, but it's actually more than that. But certain things have changed, and whether you're in sales as a professional salesperson or in any business, we're all selling all the time. And one of the things that I've seen a lot of change in is that the way people are selling today, a lot of it is now seminar selling. Do you find that you're out in front of groups a lot rather than the one-on-one?
Depends on the industry, but insurance industry is big on it.
Yeah. So speaking has become so important for so many people. And I've seen people lose business because they don't have good presentation skills. And, you know, I want to tell you something that I read about recently. It was in Harvard Business Review. It was a study by Erasmus University. And what they did is they took three actors and they had them present some imaginary product to venture capitalists. And two of the groups didn't use gestures. One of them did. And the one group, the one actor that used gestures, actually got the interest of the venture capitalist.
So besides gestures, what are some of the key elements that you feel go into a great talk when someone is trying to present to make a sale?
Well, a big thing is storytelling. A lot of times people inundate people with data and facts, and that's not what motivates people to buy. So being able to tell the story, even if you're selling something technical, what is the story of the numbers? The other thing that I think is really critical is to have laser-like focus. When I work with people, I find that they're all over the place. They can't stay on message. They get stuck in the weeds. So I have a sentence that I give people to help them get clarity and focus. And it's this: at the end of my presentation, the audience, prospect, buyer will blank. And the answer to that is your outcome. So when you start with, at the end of my presentation, the audience will blank, now you've got the clarity. So as you're preparing your presentation, cool. It's going to keep you on focus.
Yeah, well said.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I like that.
The audience will applaud. The audience will
purchase.
The audience will...
Not applaud. It's funny, Jeffrey, because somebody said that one time. Mine is the audience will applaud. And no, that's not what you want. You want an outcome.
But when they're I understand that. But when you're done giving a speech and you're not asking for a sale, like if you're at a Rotary Club or something and you're giving your speech, don't you want them to stand up and applaud?
That's always a great afterthought. Yes, it's always a good thing to have.
So why do you think that so many salespeople struggle with giving talks? And I'm not talking about like a talk where you stand up in front of 500 people. I'm talking about salesperson needs to present to 5 or 10 decision makers and their hands are sweaty and they're anxious and they're getting there and they're freaking out. How can they overcome that? And where does that fear even come from?
Well, I think it's not just sales, it's everybody. And when I started writing my book, Knockout Presentations, I did an informal study and I asked people, well, why do you get nervous? And they'd say things like, well, all eyes are on me. What if I lose my train of thought? What if I trip? And when I looked at the answers, Jen, it boiled down to one thing. It's the fear of humiliation. Mm-hmm. And it's a big fear. And when they look at neuroscience, that's really, that really fires in the brain. So what I do know when someone tells me they're very nervous is that they're living in the future because they're thinking of all the things that can go wrong. So what we try to do is bring people back into the present moment. And to your point, Jeffrey, the way you do that is through your breath. So I have a whole chapter on techniques for controlling nervousness, but coming back to the breath will actually slow down the physiology and the mental chatter and help you to feel more relaxed.
I want to clarify one myth about public speaking. Mm-hmm. People say that speaking in public is they fear speaking more than they fear death. And the reason is that if you give a shitty speech, you're still alive. This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to gittimerlearningacademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher and come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.